Good morning. This is Bob Mann in for Jim Inkster, who's off today. On this morning's show, we'll discuss the Louisiana legislative session, which ends tonight. Among the many questions, will we have a budget for the fiscal year that begins July 1st, or will lawmakers not come to an agreement and be forced to return for a special session to finish their work? We'll talk about that and other legislative issues with Jan Mueller, who runs the Louisiana Budget Project, and journalist Tyler Bridges of the Lens of New Orleans. We'll also talk about whether Louisiana is getting enough bang for its buck for what we spend on economic development. Are the tax dollars we give to industry and the billions we give in corporate tax credits really worth it? We'll explore that with former Governor Kathleen Blanco. All of this on today's show, but first the news from NPR on 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. I'm Bob Mann, filling in for Jim Inkster this morning. On today's show, we're talking about the 2013 session of the Louisiana Legislature, which ends today at 6 p.m. If you'd like to join our discussion, the number to call is 225-297-5633, or you can send us a question or a comment by email to inkstershow@wrkf.org. We're joined in studio this morning by journalist Tyler Bridges of the Lens of New Orleans and Jan Mueller, a former journalist for the Times-Picayune, who now runs the Louisiana Budget Project. Thanks, both of you, for joining us.
Good morning.
According to the Times-Picayune, the House and the Senate and the governor have an agreement on a budget. The lead of the story in this morning's Times-PicayuneNola.com says Louisiana House and Senate negotiators have struck a deal on the state budget with less than 24 hours left in this year's legislative session. The final version of the $25 billion spending plan includes a pay increase for teachers and additional funding for school districts, a pair of bills aimed at overhauling the state's budget process in future years, and a series of measures increasing revenues through trimming tax breaks and instituting a temporary tax amnesty. Is this something that will likely be approved by 6 p.m. tonight, Tyler?
I think so. I guess I would give it maybe a 98% chance. I talked to some state legislators early this morning who said they think everything is in place, although they do still need to sign off on all the details. And as one of them mentioned to me, the devil is in the details, but at least in broad terms, everybody seems to be in agreement. They are, I think the legislators are in fact getting briefed right now. And the session's beginning right now to exactly make sure everybody is on board.
Yeah, and there's a pay increase for teachers in this thing. Was this totally out of the blue? Was this not expected till the very end here?
Well, it did pop up in the end, but I think it would have been very difficult to leave the session without doing at least something for teachers. And this pay increase, keep in mind, they're just funding the inflation factor in the public school funding formula, which hasn't been funded for the last 4 years. So they're doing, they at the last minute agreed to do what they were doing every year prior to 2009. But I think once the judges got a pay raise and the clerks of courts got a pay raise, and we saw that there was going to be an increase in the school voucher program, it was going to be very difficult for these guys to leave Baton Rouge without doing something for 50,000 public school teachers in the state who've gone 4 years without a raise.
And every other state employee has gone without a raise for the same period.
And
right?
they're not getting a raise this time either. So
what happens long term? I'll throw this out to either one of you. What happens long term when it comes to sustaining pay raises for teachers, for university employees, for state employees? I mean, when do we get back to just catching up to inflation so that people aren't falling behind as they have been?
Well, that's a very big question. And we're going to go through another year without really any new revenues. I mean, you mentioned in your opening that there are some revenue measures part of this package, but there are also some tax cuts in there. And the governor's stated criteria is he wants everything to be revenue neutral. And the fact is that revenues in this state are at a 20-year low when measured against gross state product. So if you measure, you know, how much government has relative to the state economy, we're at a 20-year low, so we're not funding the things we need to fund. And so that fundamental dynamic hasn't changed, and we still are ending this year with the same structural deficit we've had for the last few years. We have more commitments, more investments that we want to make than we have money to pay for it, and that's how you get into this annual battle over one-time money and finding money through property sales and what have you, and tax amnesty is the big thing this year. Just making up ways to fill this gap year after year rather than dealing with kind of the structural issues of state spending, which we haven't addressed.
And Tyler, when Governor Jindal ran for office, he was an opponent of using this one-time money, very adamant against it. Now that's pretty much how he balances the budget. How does he reconcile that earlier position with his current practice?
Well, it's not very hard for the governor, is like most politicians, is pretty good at reconciling those sorts of things, as we saw in a press conference he had last night, where he took credit for the House and the Senate coming together when he really had not played a role, which was consistent with his relationship with the state legislature.
So he has his press conference, which for momentarily or for a time, some legislators were afraid might hurt the deal or help cause it to unravel in some way. Explain what happened.
The press conference was about at 7:15, I think, last night, and I had spoken to Speaker Cleckley and also Jack Donahue, the Senate Finance Chairman, and asked, is the governor playing a role in these negotiations as you're trying to nail down a budget, you know, right at the end? And both said, no, he's not playing a role. The governor last night said, well, we've all come together. And I've been to those kinds of press conferences before in Louisiana and also Florida, where I was a reporter, and you would typically see the House Speaker and the President of the Senate with the governor as we've all come together. But last night's press conference was just the governor. And I don't know if the members didn't know that it was being held, or they did not want to go, because there's a lot of animosity now in the legislature growing towards the legislature, towards the governors. You know, it's a piece that I wrote for The Lens, that this is a governor who's chosen not to cultivate relationships and friendships with state legislators and even the other statewide elected officials.
How is it possible that you could have the entire budget of Louisiana, $25 billion budget, hinging on some negotiations between nine legislators in a conference committee with the clock ticking and the governor not be involved in those negotiations in any way? Jan, is that unprecedented?
It does seem like there's a little bit more distance between the legislature and the governor than it has been in years past. And I don't know if that's necessarily a bad thing. You know, in most states, we have separate branches of government. And in Louisiana, it often seems like there's one branch of government, and that, the governor has a long history of kind of controlling the legislature through the leadership. This is almost unique to Louisiana. And there have been, in fits and starts over the years, attempts by the legislature to assert some independence. I think you saw some of that this session. And I think maybe it was a case where, had the governor gotten involved, the legislature might have backed off a little more. But in the end, I think the governor is getting the budget that he wants, more or less.
So, well, his chief priority was the tax package, the changes he wanted to eliminate the state income tax, and that was, you know, to use his phrase, was parked on opening day, and he really did not seem to have a major agenda after that. He was mostly playing defense of the things that he cited last night, which were achievements. One was not raising taxes, which is basically him on defense, and no Medicaid dollars from Washington, which is another instance of him playing defense. So it seems that the governor is in a weaker position vis-a-vis the legislature, and certainly his poll numbers are down.
So we're talking with journalist Tyler Bridges of The Lens of New Orleans and Jan Mueller, who runs the Louisiana Budget Project, about the Louisiana legislative session, which ends today. So as Tyler just mentioned, the session began with the governor caving in on his tax plan. Jan, you and your organization had something to do with helping build the opposition to that plan that ultimately forced him to park it, as he said.
Yeah, well, I think the big story from this session is going to be the things that didn't happen, starting with the big tax reform plan. I remember this, the big thing this session was going to be the governor trying to get rid of the state income tax. And for a governor who's had a lot of success with his initiatives, it really was remarkable that this thing never even came up for a hearing in the House or the Senate. There was so much opposition that he had to kind of abandon ship on the opening day of the session. The other thing, of course, that didn't happen was Medicaid expansion. We had an opportunity in this state to really transform our healthcare system by using federal dollars to cover 400,000 low-income adults in this state, and a lot of people worked very hard to try to make that happen, but the governor dug in his heels and remained opposed. So the governor ended up winning on Medicaid expansion, but he lost big on tax reform, and I think the state, frankly, dodged a bullet right there.
What do you mean by dodged a bullet? In what way?
Well, the governor said he was going to do revenue-neutral tax reform. By definition, that meant that some people were going to pay more and some people were going to pay less. I think when the details about this plan came out, eliminating the income tax, you know, the wealthiest people pay the most in income tax. The wealthiest corporations pay the most in income tax. And so once the details came out, we realized that this was going to be a tax shift from those at the very top to people in the middle and bottom. And it was also going to raise taxes on a lot of businesses. So I think you ended up with this very potent combination of advocates for the poor, people in the religious community, clergy, who were very concerned about the impact of this plan on the poor, and members of the business community. Lobby came out, and once they realized it was going to be a $500 million tax increase on business, they came out opposed. When you have business and the religious community opposed to a plan, you don't really have a plan.
That was a really interesting and diverse coalition of opponents to that plan, right, Tyler?
It was. And speaking of coalitions, I think one of the more interesting developments this session has been the alliance between the fiscal hawks and the Democrats. It's something that no one had expected, and certainly the governor and John Ilerio, the president of the Senate, were going to try to break that coalition. What's often forgotten is that last year's budget was approved in the House with more Democrats supporting it than Republicans, because the fiscal hawks did not want to support what they thought was not a fiscally responsible budget. And then for them to come together and with the fiscal hawks, with the Democrats, and able to keep that alliance together here until the end, forced the governor and the Senate to accede, I think, to a lot of their demands.
So what happens to the reforms that the fiscal hawks wanted to institute? How does that figuring into this last day of legislating?
They wanted to institute some changes that would make the budget writing process more transparent, use what they would call real numbers to avoid the mid-year budget cuts that have happened each year under Governor Jindal, and also to give the legislature a little more independence, something Jan was talking about that has not often happened in Louisiana. And it looks like they've gotten two of their measures through. They wanted to have them actually go to the state's voters to lock them into the Constitution. It looks like that won't happen, but they will be part of state law, so in the future. But again, you think of where the fiscal hawks were two or three years ago, and there were just a small band of them, and they've become powerful enough to work with the Democrats. And speaking of if we want to think about sort of winners and losers, Governor Jindal looks like he's going to get his increase in vouchers, so that's a victory for him. And I think Speaker Cleckley, I wrote a story several months ago for The Lens where, people were really strongly criticizing him for walking in lockstep with the governor, and we saw him show independence for the first time, which I think strengthened his position within the House and gave them more independence.
Jan, from the standpoint of the Louisiana Budget Project, are these fiscal reforms that the fiscal hawks are pushing, is it a positive step?
That remains to be seen. I mean, I think you have a group of hawks that have kind of convince themselves that there's nothing wrong with the budget that can't be changed if you just change the way it's developed. But I think what's going to happen is when it gets right down to it, we still don't have enough money to pay for critical priorities. I think there's a sense that if you just change the process a little bit and you divide the bill into two separate bills, and one is going to be discretionary dollars and the other is going to be non-discretionary dollars, and you have change the rules, that you're somehow going to end up with a better budget. I'm not sure that's the case, but it's certainly maybe worth a try.
We're talking with journalist Tyler Bridges and Jan Mueller of the Louisiana Budget Project. We'll continue the conversation about the Louisiana legislative session, last day of the session, after this short timeout. And we're back. I'm Bob Mann, sitting in for Jim Inkster today, who's off. If you would like to join the conversation this morning with journalist Tyler Bridges and Jan Mueller of the Louisiana Budget Project, we invite you to give us a ring at 297-5633, 297-5633, or send an email to inkstershow@wrkf.org. So we mentioned the Medicaid expansion, and I'm not sure how many people really understand exactly what is being proposed here, or what was being proposed here. This is not, Jan, this is not something that is for people who were jobless. This is not your classic what people would understand as your classic welfare. This is not welfare. This is health care for working people. Is that right?
This is health coverage for people making below 138% of poverty under the Affordable Care Act. Bob, as you know, the Medicaid program is expanded to cover. Right now in Louisiana, to get on Medicaid, you essentially have to be disabled or pregnant, or you have to be under 18. But adults have very low coverage, and so we send uninsured adults into the charity hospital system. And there's been a consensus in this state among liberals and conservatives for a long time that the best way to move us off the 49th place in the health rankings is to provide more coverage for people, give people an insurance card and let them choose a health provider and give them a safety net. And so you had this opportunity under the Affordable Care Act to do just that. But after the Supreme Court ruled last summer, they made it optional for states. So it kind of became a political football. But in many ways, it was a deal that was too good for states to turn down, because this expansion would have been 100% federally funded for the first 3 years, and the states would never have to pay more than 10 cents on the dollar. So for Louisiana, that would have meant 400,000 low-income adults getting covered. And the way it was proposed to happen in Louisiana was to use those federal dollars to buy private coverage for this population. So they would have a Medicaid card and they would have some health security for the first time. Right now, this population is one injury or illness away from not only a devastating, you know, health consequence, but also devastating financial consequences. If you get sick and you don't have insurance, then you're going to end up with bills and you're going to be financially devastated in addition to having poor health outcomes. So we had an opportunity to change that in this session. Again, a lot of people worked very hard to make that happen, but the governor did not want to expand the Medicaid program. He was dug in against it, and we managed to get bills out of both the health care committees in the House and the Senate, but ultimately it didn't get all the way through the process.
Tyler, Republican governors across the country, the Jane Brewer of Arizona, John Kasich of Ohio, Rick Scott in Florida, Chris Christie in New Jersey, they've all taken the money. These are all Republican governors who opposed Obamacare. They've taken the money. Governor Jindal refuses to take the money. What's the difference?
Well, I think those other governors are either running for reelection, those other Republican governors. So they're either running for re-election or they're in a state that Obama carried. And we don't have that situation here in Louisiana. And we have the added factor whereby all evidence, this governor is running for president. And obviously Obamacare is not popular among those who would be voting in the Republican primaries of 2016. And, of course, it may be possible that this is absolutely Governor Jindal's view on health care. He's certainly extraordinarily knowledgeable about the subject.
Well, but I would point out that this governor, when he was Secretary of Health and when he was governor in 2008, was in favor of doing the exact same thing that this expansion would do. There's a press release. It's still on the Health and Hospitals website from November 14th, 2008, when Governor Jindal and then Health and Hospital Secretary Alan Levine proposed something called the Louisiana Health First Initiative, and it involved taking federal Medicaid dollars and buying insurance for an expansion population. That is exactly what this plan would have done. I would suggest that the one thing that's really changed about this is the political dynamics. I should also point out that there was a poll recently by the Pew Center on the states that showed 63% of Louisianans support Medicaid expansion. So if you ask people whether they're in favor of Obamacare. That label is you know, fraught with political with politics, and people will probably say they oppose it. But when you ask them whether they support using federal dollars to expand health care for low-income populations, the answer is yes. So I think the politics of this are very interesting, but majorities of people, when they hear the facts, support this initiative.
This is an issue that I assume won't go away. We'll probably see it in the next legislative session, 2014. Do you think the prospects are any better next year? The governor's political fortunes decline or increase? I mean, would that potentially affect whether the legislature approves this next time around?
Much too early to tell, but yeah. By next year, we're going to know how this is rolling out in other states. And I think that's going to play a big role in deciding how this issue goes in Louisiana. The facts are clear that this was a money saver for the state because you're taking federal dollars and replacing the money that the state spends. I mean, we should add that we're already spending money to care for the uninsured. When the uninsured go into an emergency room with either an emergency or a non-emergency, that care costs something, and the cost of that care is either swallowed by the hospital or more likely passed on to you and I and other people who have private insurance in the form of higher premiums. Or it's paid for by uncompensated care dollars. So we're paying for this care. By next year, we're going to know how this program is working in other states. Like you said, there are a lot of Republican governors that decided this is too good a deal to pass up, and they're going to go ahead. And we're going to see how it's working in those states, and hopefully it'll work well in those states. And Louisiana legislators will take a second look at this.
Right. Tyler?
Speaking of health care, Bob, you know, another major issue we haven't had a chance to touch on yet is the privatization of the state's hospital system, which is something it's going to be a legacy of Bobby Jindal because it's such a dramatic change and a system that goes back, I guess, to Huey Long. And the initial information is that it looks like it's going to be more expensive than the Jindal and his people were initially saying. And not even that, I don't think really people know how the impact it's going to have or how it's actually going to work. It's striking that the lack of information that the legislature and the LSU Board of Supervisors are moving forward with this without having that information. And that's going to be a major story, I think, in the coming months.
Let's go stay on the question of health care and go to the phones. Coeli from Scotlandville, you're on the air with Jan Mueller and Tyler Bridges.
Good morning. How are you, gentlemen, today?
Good.
I think I have more of a comment than I do have a question. In the event that someone has a job that provides them health care, a lot of people today work on jobs that they really wouldn't want to be on simply because they have the benefit of health care. Now, if the government were to enter the realm of giving people the ability to obtain affordable health care, the more people that are added to the rolls, wouldn't that invariably drive the cost of health care down? And right now, the crux and problem to much of the health care debate is the cost.
Anyone who wants to take that question? Jan?
I think you make an excellent point. I think when anybody who looks at health care reform understands that the best systems are ones where everybody is covered. And if you provide coverage for everybody, that kind of helps stabilize the insurance market, and it's good for people who have insurance. And one of the things about the Affordable Care Act is that it provides insurance portability so that people who are self-employed or maybe work in a small company or can't afford insurance on their own are supposed to have access to private health coverage, whether through Medicaid or through these health insurance exchanges, which are supposed to serve people who are a little bit above the poverty level but still can't afford private insurance on their own.
Let's go back to the phones. HB from Denham Springs. HB, you're on the air with Tyler Bridges and Jan Mueller.
Good morning. I believe the Louisiana legislative auditor commented in the paper that the tax breaks that we're giving many industries in the state of Louisiana, particularly the film industry, is not producing the economic development that was predicted when the 30%, as was given to the film industry, was implemented. My question is, how can we afford to continue sending good money after bad that's not producing? Thank you, sir.
That's an excellent question, sir. And the film industry subsidies have gotten very, very expensive. We're spending close to $250 million a year to keep the industry in Louisiana. And, of course, the more successful the industry is in Louisiana, the more money it costs the taxpayers. The Department of Economic Development's own studies, the legislative auditor, everybody who's looked at this knows that the program is not producing a return on investment for taxpayers. This is a plain old subsidy that we're giving to the industry to come here and make their TV shows and their movies, and it is spending that is crowding out other spending, and it's one of the reasons we're spending less and less on higher education every year. It's why one reason we're having trouble supporting our state parks and all the other things that the state wants to do with the tax revenue that comes in, because this is a spending program, and it's really grown dramatically in recent years.
There was an effort, Tyler, to change that in the session that failed, right? So the tax credit remains the same as it has been.
Yes, it will remain unchanged. And I guess I wanted just to take a moment to you know, today I'll be over in the Capitol talking to legislators who will be talking about this specific budget, and I think there will be a lot of probably stories this afternoon and tomorrow where people are expressing relief and happiness over the budget. And I guess my sort of overall sense is that if you're a person who doesn't want a lot of government, who believes that the private sector is going to move Louisiana ahead, and you don't want much changes in the budget, then you're going to be happy with this budget, because this budget really is basically standstill. If you're a person who believes that government has a role in creating jobs and taking care of those who need assistance, and that is important, you know, much more money for healthcare, education, roads, things like that, then you won't be happy with this budget, because again, this is basically a standstill.
You agree with that, Jan?
Yeah, I think you summed it up very well.
Let me ask you this: for the time immemorial, governors have risen and fallen on the success of what they've been able to accomplish in a legislative session. And Tyler's saying here that in some ways Governor Jindal has won by what he's prevented, not so much by what he's done. Is that what you're saying, Tyler? And is that what we're now maybe seeing for the next couple of years out of this governor?
Well, I returned to the state in October after being away for 16 years. And, you know, it's striking when you look at the indices, the indexes of the state, and how it seems to be 48th or 49th and 50th and so many that you don't want to be, or first, second, and third, and other ones you don't want to be. And my sense is clearly that Bobby Jindal is making a bet on privatization, on the private sector, and that is going to move the state forward. There are other people who think, no, really, that, you know, you need a more direct activist government role in here. But I think it doesn't seem like the state has moved forward that much, at least in the short term, with this budget.
One issue that I didn't hear anything about, and other than perhaps when it came to Medicaid expansion, was the issue of poverty in this state. We've got some of the highest poverty in the country, and yet was anybody talking about what we can do to move the needle on that?
No. The last person who really addressed this from a position of leadership was Governor Blanco, but this is an issue that has gone largely ignored in the last few years. It shouldn't be ignored, but it is, and it doesn't get nearly as much attention as it does, as it should, when the legislature gets together to meet. You know, there are a lot of lobbyists who walk the halls, and they all represent industries, and that's how our system works. But the poor don't have a lobbyist in Baton Rouge in the same way that industries and special interests do. I thought one of the telling moments of this session was when the House fiscal hawks and the Democrats first got together. Their initial compromise plan called for about $300 million in new revenues by getting rid of a lot of tax breaks and modifying some of this spending we do through the tax code. And it was going to be a real meaningful revenue raiser for the first time in many years. and that plan survived about 2 days because the governor promptly called the press conference, and he lined up lobbyists from all these industries behind him in the fourth floor press room, and each lobbyist got a chance to speak, and they got up there and they talked about it and how horrible it would be if we did away with these tax breaks, and within 24 hours, the supporters of this plan got cold feet, and we were back to kind of maintaining the status quo. That was a really telling moment in this session, and it showed how hard it is to kind of change the system that we have in place. So we don't talk enough about poverty, and we don't talk enough about real fundamental change and changing that dynamic.
Speaking of those tax credits, it did seem, Tyler, at the beginning of the session, there might be some sentiment among even Republicans in the legislature to do something about that, to eliminate some of these credits or reduce their amount, and that just didn't happen, did it?
Yeah, well, you have a governor who is very, very consistent about absolutely no net tax increase, and his initial plan, as Jan mentioned earlier, was going to have both increases and decreases, so it was supposedly revenue neutral. And so you have a governor who is just dead set against it, and there's just not the will in the legislature, I think even among the people of Louisiana. You know, this is a generally conservative state. People want the services, but they don't really want to pay higher taxes for those services.
We've got about 40 seconds left, Jan, and this is an issue that takes a lot more than that. But will we ever get back to funding higher education at a respectable amount?
I certainly hope so. I think one of the bright spots of this session is that a lot of the fiscal hawks, there's a growing awareness that this money we're spending through the tax code and tax breaks is costing us money and eroding our ability to do other things and invest in the fundamental building blocks of a strong economy, which starts with education. So I think the first step is awareness. Now the next move is to try to translate that into actually action and rebuilding our flagship to a status that's worthy of the name.
You published some information. Actually, we have a little more time than I thought. You published some information on that showed that we're funding higher education lower than at any time since the 1950s?
Since the late 1950s, the state investment in higher education right now is at a low ebb for literally half a century. And, you know, we've seen there's some information I was looking at last night on the Legislative Fiscal Office website, and it showed that in 2009, the governor's first year in office, we spent about $1.5 billion state general fund on higher education. That was 18% of the state general fund. This year, and these figures are about a week old, it doesn't include the changes made in the last couple of days, $204 million, 2.7%. That's a dramatic decrease.
An amazing decrease. Tyler Bridges, Jan Mueller, thank you so much for joining us, for being here today to talk about the session. Good luck with the rest of the day. We'll be back in a little bit with Governor Kathleen Blanco to talk about funding for economic development in the state on WRKF. Stay with us. And we're back, and I'm joined now by former Governor Kathleen Blanco. She really needs no introduction. Governor, thanks for joining us this morning.
Good morning, Bob.
So in full disclosure to the audience, I guess I should make sure everyone knows that for about 2.5 years, I was your communications director when you were governor, which was an interesting and very fun and rewarding time, and we need to lay that out there. And I want to invite people to give us a call to talk to Governor Blanco. If you have a question or a comment for her, the number is 297-5633 or inkstershow@wrkf.org. So you've been you're just getting back into the United States, is that right?
Well, good to talk to you, Bob. Yes, we took a nice vacation and just got in last night.
Well, I appreciate you joining us because I know what jet lag is like, and it's kind of you to join us. Before we get into the questions that we talked about, I don't know how closely you've been following the session just in the last week, but what do you make of this very strange session with sort of an absentee governor?
Well, it is one of the strangest sessions that I think historically speaking, it started off on the most unusual footing that I ever witnessed when the governor conceded his announced agenda. That set a strange note because he didn't offer an alternative agenda. I think that governors have a right to change their minds, of course, but normally when you do that, you give the legislature more guidance and you offer an alternative plan. And he sort of like threw in the towel and just walked away, which gave the legislature all the sense of power and authority that it needed to become an independent body. So I think that's set the stage for what you've seen over the last few couple of months here, where the legislature took its business very seriously. The only time I ever saw that was many years ago when I was in the legislature and the governor had some legal problems and he was gone. And the legislature had to become the responsive body. So then you saw this unification of forces, the three forces, the fiscal hawks, which represented a small group of Republicans initially. You saw the Democratic caucus. I guess the fiscal hawks were led by Representative Guyman and Representative Cameron Henry. And then you saw John Bel Edwards leading the Democratic caucus and Katrina Jackson leading the Black caucus. And so this unusual group of bedfellows got together and saw that they had common ground, lots of common ground. I think they were all very tired of seeing flawed appropriations bills get through the process under the governor's guidance. And then the governor inserted his own priorities when he would almost always have to cut because so much of his budgets were based on one-time funding. And the estimates were too high. So everybody just got tired of the governor putting his own priorities in when he did the cutting after the session was over. And they wanted to know that the budget they were passing was real and dependable and something that expressed legislative priorities instead of exclusively the governor's priorities. So that set up a whole new dynamic, and that's what's so rare and unusual for a seated governor to simply divest himself of the responsibility at the outset and then let the legislature do its own thing. I thought it was a little ironic, though, when he did attempt to interject himself into the process, because this has been totally a legislative process, more like Washington in a sense, but with a lot of bipartisan cooperation, I might say. But the independence that the legislature was experiencing was more like in Washington, where the Congress views itself as very separate from the president. And in Louisiana, really, the legislature usually yields to the governor. And as long as the governor is doing something reasonable and good, I think the legislature always will yield to the governor. But when the governor is doing questionable things, then you've got a problem.
Well, I don't think that anyone but Governor Jindal would disagree that an independent legislature is a good thing. But it does strike a lot of people as odd that this governor would be almost totally absent from the process and at the last minute. I mean, this is, after all, a bill that he's going to have to sign or veto. And here's a conference committee that wants to know that something they pass is going to be signed by the governor, and yet it appears that he was not involved, or if he was, there's not much evidence of it. So can you imagine that situation where you would not be involved in some way when you were governor?
Well, no, I cannot imagine it. I think that his bad poll numbers set the stage for this also. If he was still very, very popular in Louisiana, if he was polling high favorable numbers right now, the legislature would once again have gone along with his agenda. But the people of Louisiana literally worn out from the dramatic cuts that have been inflicted on both health care and education. And this business of, you know, taking public school money to fund private schools and to keep the school funding frozen for high school and elementary schools and for devastating higher education, you know, people have just become awakened. It's been a gradual awakening, certainly, because most people do not pay that close attention to what's going on in the legislature. And those of us who understand government saw this coming for several years. But the average citizen is busy working, you know, doing their own thing, working to put food on the table, and suddenly looking up and having to pay an extraordinary portion of a college bill that never existed before. And we see the hospital safety net system being destroyed without having an alternative system in place. There are just a lot of things. Louisiana people do want government to do certain things and to do it right. I think that what he underestimated was the fact that people do believe in education. Even people with their children in private schools want a strong public education system, because everybody knows that they might be one job away from having to put their children into the public schools. So, you know, people will do anything they need to do for their children, and this, I think, was underestimated by the governor. So, you know, when he started really pushing hard and removing money from the education systems and actually privatizing so much, it became something that people just began to rebel against. You know, when you see for-profit education systems being financed by the state, I think that there is something there that just doesn't sit well with our citizenry. We expect our education dollars to go directly into education and not have any institutions that are siphoning money off the top. And this idea of privatization can be carried a little too far in certain areas of government. And certainly, you know, we use the private sector to build our highways and to build our roads. And, you know, government is the overseer to make sure that everything is being done right and that we're not being cheated. We've seen that in the past, you know, where the private sector took advantage of state government and built shoddy roads and bridges and things like that. So, you know, that's the role of government, is to oversee, to partner with the private sector, just to make sure that the private sector is not gouging and that the monies are well spent. So I think Louisiana people do have a clear understanding of what is going on and what their expectations are, and that's why they have literally, technically rebelled, and that is why the legislature feels so good and confident about what it's been doing, operating independently of the governor.
We're talking to former Governor Kathleen Blanco. If you'd like to join the conversation with a question, call us at 297-5633. I want to turn now, Governor, to the topic that we had planned to discuss at perhaps a little more length, but let's dive into it, talking about economic development. Louisiana spends quite a bit on attracting business to the state and gives a lot of tax credits to companies that are already here, billions in tax credits, hundreds of millions over the years in inducements to corporations. You did some of that when you were governor, and other governors before you did that. There are a couple of media organizations, including the New York Times, who've questioned that. And I'm going to read just a little bit from a December 2012 article in the New York Times that said that tallied up the thousands of local and state incentives that were granted around the country and found that states, countries, and states, counties, and cities are giving up more than $80 billion each year to these companies. And they don't have a full accounting of that money. They don't know. They can't say whether that money is well spent and whether it is actually encouraging or resulting in the economic development that the states say it will. Do you think that Louisiana or other states, but particularly Louisiana, is doing this the right way, or have we gone too far in the direction of subsidizing companies that might move here anyway?
That's a very delicate balancing act, Bob. In order to get a company that brings well-paying jobs, and I think that should be your first criteria. When I was governor, there was no criteria. You know, any company that wanted to come into Louisiana could you know, be eligible for tax breaks. And I instructed everyone that these jobs had to be well-paying jobs. The average salary had to be well above above minimum wage. And I simply refused to invest in companies that paid minimum wage to their employees. We've got loads of those kinds of businesses in Louisiana. That is not the kind of business that Louisiana needs to attract. And I've seen some of that happen during the last 5 or 6 years, you know, indiscriminately giving companies lots of benefits. I've also seen the legislature, in the face of all of these dramatic cuts, continue to cut and give tax breaks to businesses. And once you give a tax break, it's hell to pay to get it back. Now, I will tell you, you know, all of a sudden you're imposing taxes on business, just as we saw in this when the governor's early proposal tried to move some back onto business. They don't want to give up a tax break. So, you know, you've got to be very careful, and somebody needs to be minding the store when it comes to giving more and more tax breaks. You know, I vetoed some of that stuff when I was governor, you know, just giving away the state fisc. And the people of Louisiana, I think, were shocked to learn how much money is given away in tax breaks to, say, the top 2%, you know, the high earning side of the equation in Louisiana. So, you know, you've got to weigh and measure all of that and try to figure out exactly what the value is. And the other thing that we instituted when I was governor was to make sure that we had what we called clawbacks. If a business did not perform as they promised in the contracts that they signed with us, in other words, if they didn't hire as many people as they claimed they would, if their average salary schedule did not meet the demands of our contracts, then they owed the state money back, or they were denied further tax incentives. And it happens. The economy can turn sour, and a company cannot make enough money, to add. However, the state of Louisiana does not owe them the extra tax incentives if they cannot perform. So you've got to be very, very selective. And I think that what has happened is that we've just lost sight of everything. I mean, I think Walmart is a good corporate citizen in the retail industry. Goodness knows you do not have to give them an incentive to locate in a rural area, because that is their marketplace, and that is where they're going to go.
Are we giving Walmart incentives?
We've gotten a little out of the realm of what needs to happen in Louisiana.
And we are giving Walmart, the state is giving Walmart's incentives to locate in towns and cities in Louisiana?
That has happened, yes. That has been happening. And, you know, retail business has not been typically the kind of business that you needed to attract. You need to attract manufacturing. That's where the good, solid money is in terms of salaries. But the middle class of the United States grew strong, and, you know, we lost a lot of manufacturing to overseas companies. There is a whole big movement now nationally, and our companies are coming back to our shores as the economies of other countries changing, and it makes more business sense to have that manufacturing in the United States and in Louisiana. I mean, we should always be looking, you know, at that aspect. You know, oil and gas has been very, very strong in Louisiana, and normally when oil and gas is doing well, Louisiana does well. And of course, those are some of the highest paying jobs. So there's this whole strange dynamic that the business side is supposed to be doing really well in Louisiana. We've supposed to have added more and more jobs to our state fisc, but the collections are down, and that's an absolute virtue of what they've done with the tax, what the legislature has done with the tax base, and this governor, what he has done with the tax base. So, you know, we need to get back to a more sensible balance where everybody pays their fair share. And then I think you'll see more investment in higher ed. You know, Dr. Jenkins and other higher education.
Governor, I'm sorry, but we are running out of time. We've got just a couple of. Thank you for joining us. I hope we can continue this conversation another time. Please give my best wishes to Coach and hope to see you in person soon.
Thank you.
And thanks
Good
again.
Talking to you.
Good
Bye.
Talking to you, too. God bless. Thanks again to Tyler Bridges and Jan Mueller for joining us earlier to talk about the session. And finally, thanks to Kevin Gallagher and Amy Jeffries, who worked behind the scenes to make me sound halfway intelligent this morning. Jim Inkster will be back at this mic tomorrow. This is Bob Mann wishing you a wonderful and safe day.
Podcasts of The Jim Inkster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Inkster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.